finish today with this level of discussion. One more aspect of Parshat Vayera tomorrow, and Bezot Hashem on Wednesday, I'd like to go right into Parshat Vayera. So what we started seeing yesterday, that once we start examining Parshat Vayera as a whole, and checking out all the different topics in the Parsha, what we found was as such, we'll quickly do it again, Parshat Vayera had basically five paragraphs, Parshiyot Petuchot or Stumot. The opening paragraph, it was one piece, there was one sequence of psukim, there was no breakdown of a Parshat Petucha or Stuma, and yet it was very extensive, very long, and it seemed to have three different topics that don't seem to be related at all, which is exactly parallel to the three different roles of the three different angels that come to Avraham Avinu. They come as a group, one group, and yet each one has their own separate individual role, and it manifests itself in terms of the actual paragraph that it's extending itself over three supposable different topics, and yet they're all joined together into one, and that is what we call the Besorah of Yitzchak. Yitzchak will be born in this parsha. In a year's time, Avraham Avinu will have a son. Before that was the healing of Avraham Avinu and the destruction of Sodom. It's all somehow joined together into one piece, sky to one paragraph. If it is, that means that there's one underlying topic over here that's somehow mysteriously all interrelated. In any case, the next topic was Avimelech. That was that deja vu sensation we had, that Avraham Avinu was already in this with Paro and Sarah being taken. We actually called Avimelech 1 because later on in the parsha there was another episode with Avimelech that was Avimelech 2. But in the meantime, what we have in the middle is that last, after so much waiting and patience, the birth of Yitzchak, which was coupled together with the Birur Yishamaya that we spoke about already last week. And then we get into Avimelech number 2, the second interaction with Avimelech. We were surprised why the parsha goes and splits it into two. One prior to the birth of Yitzchak, one after the birth of Yitzchak. Here we saw something strange, a brit, a covenant, slash a shuah. Both terms, by the way, are mentioned in the parsha. And they're going to be repeated again. The whole interaction between Avraham and Avimelech is going to be repeated later on, and between Yitzchak in Parshat Chayesara and Avimelech. And there's going to be again a treaty. But this treaty, whether you call it a brit or a shuah, is between Avimelech and his descendants and Avraham Avinu, of having peace. And the Shvua then manifests itself in Avraham Avinu's side, at least, that he gives over to Avimelech. Avraham Avinu gives over to Avimelech 7 sheep, and they end up calling the name, strangely enough, Be'er Sheva. The well of the seven. Well, we're not exactly sure. Does this go back to the 7 sheep? Does it go back to the Shvua? I already mentioned yesterday, what is the relationship between Shvua and Sheva? There's something deep about the Sheva over here. I went even more on, and we saw the wells, Be'erot, and are very significant at every significant crossroad in Sefer Bereshit and in the Sefer Shemot, in the formation of Klal Yisrael, at every certain significant crossroad, there's a well. All the major shiduchim for Klal Yisrael, putting them together, are on the basis of a well. And here too also, what is this well? What's the well of seven? We spoke a lot about the concept of seven last week. Not so clear what this whole thing is about. And we finish off the parsha with the story of the Akedah. The parsha then came out to be coming across a very diverse, very all over the place, and doesn't seem to be reflecting an underlying theme in it. Though as a whole, of course, if we were to choose one, the major inyan that's taking Sefer Bereshit, one second, at one step further, it's clearly the birth of Yitzchak and Avraham Avinu being able to go on one stage further in terms of forming a people, and that is from Avram, we're going on to the transition, to the beginning of transition from Avram to Yitzchak, where the birth of Yitzchak from Avram is underlying this transition from Parshat Lech Lecha to Parshat Vayera. Yes, Evan?
Why did you choose not to mention
Rebecca? We will. Can look at it as it's true. You can put this as Rivka being born at the very end. It is true, paragraph-wise, if we were to be in the system being accurate or precise, that's correct. We'll talk about it. In any case, going on from where we left off yesterday, and what we started speaking about when we ran out of time was that we started seeing with Avraham Avinu that he's not just a very important individual. Rather, behind his identity, or at the depth of his essence, is a midah, of a group of 7 midot, the 7 midot that make up the midot the way the world works and the way every small world, meaning every human being, works. And the first and the seven midot to unfold and to come into the world and is the midah of chesed, which Avraham Avinu was the carrier of. We spoke about this in length. We've defined that midah. And clearly, as we're going from Parshat Lech Lecha to Parshat Vayera, and we're getting into the next stage or the next midah personality to unfold, we're going into midot-wise, one can definitely speak about that underlying the transition from Parshat Lech Lecha to Vayera is we're in a mode of transition from the midah of chesed, giving birth to the midah of din or gevura. Okay? Din or gevura, whatever term you choose to use. So, let's start developing this and let's start seeing the meaning. We touched upon it very shortly, but let's develop it now. And that is the midah that Yitzhak Avinu represents, the midah of going from Lech Lecha into Vayera, Avram, transition into Yitzhak. We didn't put Avram in the background, he's still very much in the center, but midah-wise, we're starting to unfold the new midah, and it's the midah of Chesed, Gevura, or Din. Okay, that's an overall picture of things. Now, how did we define the Midah of Chesed in order for us to go into the definition of Midah of Gevura? Yes, Josh?
You said it's going out of your nature, meaning whether it's good or bad, just you have your realm of your boundaries and you're going out from that.
The tendency of anything in the world, we said it already, we said the same thing, that a human being extending himself beyond his boundaries of self towards an old lady at the kotel and giving her money, that's an act of chesed. But we saw that act can be channeled also negatively, and chesed doesn't necessarily have only positive meaning. Anything, anytime that something goes outside of its borders, that is an act of, it's a mode of, it's a direction of chesed. If you wish, the midah is expansive by its very essence. Okay? The tendency of things to expand beyond their given borders is the midah of chesed and the midah of gevura, we said.
Yes. To be disciplined and to stay within the boundaries.
Right. The tendency, the complete opposite to midah, and that is the very good, the tendency of anything, a human being, a cell in the body, not to extend beyond its boundaries, rather to remain within its borders, with the borders of self. And not to move out of yourself will be the midah of gevura. Hence, I always quote this. This is the best source to quote in the context of that. Looking for what the source in terms of midah of gevura. Ezehu gibor. Gibor is he who carries the midah of gevura. Ezehu gibor hakovesh et yitzro. Just to tell you what was said. Ezehu gibor. He who holds up his he self disciplines himself self in the mode of self restraint. He holds himself back. He does not go forward. Okay? It's any time that a person says no to something, his midah of gevura is coming out. I already quoted the Chazal, "Olam tehes smol docha v'yamin mekarevet." Your left hand should always be saying no to things, and your right hand should be closening yourself and saying yes to things. By the way, I think people mentioned over here that Rav Demisal recently spoke about this. The seven, clearly the seven, one can suspect that the Mekubalim explicitly say so, that the seven midot correspond to the seven shades of color. What would you suspect were the Mekubalim, what color would they attribute to the midah of Gevura?
Red.
Red. Why? Anybody who drives, you get the traffic lights to stop. Red light, stop. Okay. So we intuitively, worldwide, we say, there's something about the color red, stop. Okay? Obviously it has much deeper meaning and expression than that, and what's the relationship between that and blood? One can go on and on and on, we will over time. Yes, I mean.
If Gevura means staying within your boundaries and not going outside your boundaries, not within that sort of thing, the whole point of justice is that I can stay with myself, but I mean,
we're going to be developing it. What Sadia is referring to is and I said it already before, every midah is not a word, it's a concept, and it has many different faces and aspects and shades to it. Never fall into the mistake of thinking that you could translate into one term in English what the midah is about. At most, the different terms are giving us different aspects of the Midah. And as we grow in our understanding, there's more and more aspects and layers to the Midah. As I was bringing up, there's a whole other level to the Midah of Guru, and there is another face to it, and that's the Midah of Din. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to the world in the Midah of Din, it's that same Midah of Guru coming out in a different name, Midah of Din. How does that go into this definition? We will be talking about it on some level already today, B'zat Hashem. Okay, now, till now, on a human level of midot, again, we can talk about the midot and the way God relates to the world, it's God's character traits, so to speak, or it's in the way we relate to the world, and then it's a human traits, but we're created b'tzelem Elokim, we share the same midot with our Creator. Now, what about, listen carefully to the question, how would these two first traits, okay, all traits stem from these first two, which again are opposite in their orientation. But once, instead of speaking about them in terms of the way God relates to the world, or in terms of the way, predominantly we spoke till now, the way we relate to each other, ben adam lechaverot, in terms of relating to God, man and his relationship to God, what terms would we use, or how do we describe relating to God in this midah as opposed to in this midah? What terminology do we use? We don't say we relate to God with chesed or with gevura. We use different terms. And clearly, they are these midot, but dressing themselves up on another level now that we're standing in front of God. Yes, Daniel.
Rachamim for chesed, I imagine.
That we relate to Kadosh Baruch Hu with rachamim? We have mercy for God?
I thought you meant like, how do we...
No, I'm saying, how do we relate to God in many different ways. But if we're talking about this team, these two midot, how would you translate these midot? The more expansive tendency of mind as opposed to more contractive tendency of mind, how do these two opposites manifest themselves in the standing in front of God? Yes, Avi, thank you.
Fair enough.
Very nice. Yafemod, what's the terminology in English? Ahavan Yira. Ahavan Yira, excellent. Good. Very good. Ahavan. And Yira. One second. What we would usually tend to refer to it as Ahavat Hashem, right? Ahavat Hashem. And Yirat Shamayim. There's much more in terms of sources. We don't talk about Yirat Hashem. We talk about Ahavat Hashem. We talk about Yirat Shamayim. Anybody suspect why that is, by the way? So when Rav Hilton talks about it, why Ahavat Hashem as opposed to Yirat Shamayim? Yes, there.
I mean, just like on a connotative basis, like Hashem and the Shem Havaya generally have like a connotation of dealing with like the Midah of Chesed and like our personal relationships with Hashem every day. Whereas like Yirat Shamayim, like Shamayim generally like seems to encompass like, I don't know, the whole like heavenly yoke of things that will like, I don't know, that are in charge of you and will you like, I'm not explaining well.
Okay, I ought to do that. Yes,
You can think of Hashem like specifically in the aspects of Shema in general. Okay, I think it's getting closer. Yes, Avi. Basic example, you're scared of someone, you don't want to say their name. You see, like, you're scared of someone, there's a certain distance between you.
Distance, yes. And Shamayim is that which, I think it takes what Sadi said was said further. Shamayim is that which we always represents to us, that which is distant from us, far from us. It's the farthest we can actually see. So as we're in the mode of Ahavat Hashem, by its very essence, it means I'm trying to extend myself to bond with and to get close with God. So I'm referring to Him, I'm trying to relate and get closer to Him. So I'm referring, and I relate to the term Him, the Shem. That's all I can actually relate. I can't relate to the essence of God. I can relate to His name, which means the way He comes across to me. But, when it comes to Yirah, it's the complete opposite mode of fearing, of canceling myself in front of God. Okay, then it's a mode of a God where God is perceived as distant, as far, as great, as tremendous, and I'm so small in relationship to Him. Something along these lines. But in any case, so, again, in the context of Ezu Gibora Mevate HaKoveshet Yitzro, when somebody's mevatel his yetzer, not just because of an internal moral, but because of his yirat shamayim, that's a midah of gevura. Meaning he's canceling his desire, he's canceling his will in front of the greater will of God, whether he sees eye to eye to it, whether he can relate it, whether he cannot relate it. This is what God commanded. I believe in the system called Judaism. I accept Torah as Min HaShamayim. I have Yirat Shamayim, and I cancel my will in front of a greater will. That self-cancellation is the complete opposite of self-extending towards God. And in that sense, Ahava and Yirah, the first two most basic midot in standing in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and two opposite complementing modes. What? Very good. Excellent. And you know, I didn't think of mentioning it completely. In fact, I think Ramban says that actually explicitly. That the origin midah behind all mitzvot aseh is ahava, the midah of ahava. And the origin midah behind all 365 mitzvot lot aseh is that of yirah. Exactly. When you are actively doing a mitzvah, that's one more act of extending yourself towards in closeness. And every single lota says holding back. Where do we find these two faces in the context of Shabbat?
Shamor v'zachor.
Zachor v'shamor v'dibur echad. There's the zachor, the positive aspect of Shabbat. There's the negative aspect of Shabbat. Doing and refraining. And v'dibur echad, we emphasize that they were both as opposite as they may be, were mentioned together. Is there a chair for him? And of course, there's chairs. Excellent, Sadi. Totally, completely. The Rishonim point that out explicitly. Mitzvot aseh, as opposed to mitzvot lot aseh. Zachor v'shamo v'dibur echad. Okay. Now, let's take Ezehu Gibor Koveshet Yitzlo, canceling one of my desires in front of God. Let's take it one step further. What happens, or how do we call the tendency where I don't just cancel one desire in my being, rather I cancel my entirety of my being in front of Him? What do we call that? Again, I'm not just canceling, I'm not mevatel. Chassidut developed a lot the concept of bitul. Chabad developed this tremendously. Bitul. This is the same midah that we're talking about. Yira, gevura, yira in front of Hashem Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Ezu Gibor Kodeshet Yitzlo, you have a desire to fulfill this fantasy and you hold yourself back, you cancel that desire or that fantasy of being fulfilled in front of that greater will. You believe it's true, it's for the good, this is God's will, you cancel your own. But speaking beyond just one defined, detailed desire in you, rather not canceling, you're not mevatel one desire in the makeup of yourself, you are canceling your entire self in front of a greater will. Yes, Josh?
Sacrifice.
What?
Sacrifice.
Mesirut, what we would refer to as Mesirut Nefesh. Or what we say in Shema, V'ahavta l'shem elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha, afilu notelet nafshecha, even if the Kodesh Baruch Hu takes your nefesh away. Who in our history embodies, who represents, who personifies Mesirut Nefesh and all Mesirut Nefesh throughout the ages? And they were many, millions of Mesirut Nefesh, of jumping into the fire and yelling out Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad throughout the ages. All those were the activating of the first Mesirut Nefesh, the prototype Mesirut Nefesh in Klal Yisrael is?
Abba.
Why?
First S.
Why do you say that, Eliezer?
Akedat
Yitzchak. Akedat Yitzchak. That's true. Chazal talked about the jumping into the fire of Abraham. You know, I think it's another, it's to be examined separately, definitely not in the actual text of the Torah. But, just one second, Sadia. But, Akedat Yitzchak. Let's develop this a little. Most times that people speak of or think of Akedat Yitzchak, the focus is actually Avram Avinu in terms of how he's extending himself and the son that he's been waiting for a lifetime is expected to go and sacrifice, and that we focus on that. That's the most incredible midah of Avram Avinu coming out of him, as true as that may be, but often we miss out on the prime core of Akedat Yitzchak, by definition, Akedat Yitzchak. Now let's develop this. Chazal teaches, the Gemara says that if you look carefully, whatever this may mean, on the Mizbeach, on Har Abayit, you can see the ashes of Yitzchak Avinu, which are still gathered there. Afarosh el Yitzchak tzavur al gabei hamizbeach, tzavur munach al gabei hamizbeach. The ashes of Yitzchak Avinu are gathered and are positioned on top of the Mizbeach. What does that mean? He wasn't burnt, he wasn't shechted. The Akedah did not take place in the end. And yet the Chazal, the Gemara says that his ashes are there. If you look carefully enough, you can see the ashes of Yitzchak Avinu on the Mizbeach. How do we understand that? Yes, please.
Like within like Midrashim and other stuff, it seems like that there's a very strong tendency to understand that it's since like Avram would have done it, I guess, whatever, it's like it was done in some way. Like, and we even like saying like the Zechus of the Kiddush, it's like we sort of have this conception that it sort of was done. Like, and one of the Midrashim even points out that like Sarah and Minu died not because she heard that it was good. Like one of them says she heard Yitzchak was killed and she died. So like, it still has an effect, like, in the actual reality. Like, his death had an effect, even though he didn't actually die.
Okay, let's see more let's see more expressions to this. Yes.
The Patrick says, well,
I can't hear.
The Patrick says, well,
the Lo Sachah Sachtat Bincha. Okay, that can, if somebody would want to really argue with it, you will say, well, and from your relative to the perspective of Avraham Avinu, if he would have come to it, you prove that he would have. But I agree with you that on a deeper level, it's hinting towards death. Yes, Avi.
I mean, if we say the whole thing about life is that you can't live unless you have like the Zira, right?
Yeah.
We talked about Ganeid and such.
Yeah.
Like, so it's the same thing with Yitzhak. He sacrifices, as we say, his Zira, his free will. He died in that point. He surpasses his own will for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So since he gave up his will for HaKadosh Baruch Hu,
that's very good. I'd like to put together what you guys were talking about, specifically what Avi is saying. Many sources you check in Chazal, you'll find, because of lack of time, I'm going to quote the sources right now, but we'll go over, as we'll go through the parsha, we'll see some expressions to it. Yitzchak really went through a major internal shift as a result of the Akedah, and the Yitzchak Avinu, who comes off the Akedah, off the Mizbeach, is not the same Yitzchak that went on top of it. Many expressions to the fact that Chazal attribute the blindness of Yitzchak Avinu to the Akedah, that the Malachim were crying and the tears went into his eyes, and he went blind, however we understand it, but however we take it, but still, the actual Akedah brings about Yitzchak Avinu, doesn't see anymore. What does it mean that he doesn't see? It is a very significant meaning to it. It plays a very active role. And then the next very important stage in the selection process, with Yitzchak choosing or not choosing, yes, correctly, incorrectly, that's not clear there in terms of Yaakov and Esav. But in any case, the blindness, and I'm just giving it as one of many expressions, Yitzchak Avinu is not the same being that he was before he went up. And if you think about it, it's not at all surprising, even for us people. Because we've all read, I would suspect, about people who, Lo Aleinu, have gone through what we call today. If I can compare, I will, to a certain degree, a near-death experience. And a near-death experience, meaning you're on the verge of death, you see death in front of your eyes, which clearly Yitzchak Avinu did. He was very conscious of what's going on. Chazal said explicitly, the Pesukim also hinted the fact, he understood what was happening. He was basically one moment before his neck was to be shechted, and he sees death in front of his eyes, and as you could suspect, and if you don't, well, definitely calls for some contemplation, but this is stuff that often, sometimes you would read. Either people had a near-death experience in the deep sense of the word, that they really, in the course of a heart attack, Lo Aleinu, or a stroke, Lo Aleinu, or during a surgery, their soul disconnected from their body and they experienced something high up above. We have our sources that talk about it explicitly. We have been some research, call it scientific or not, even though some scientists have looked seriously into it, but some, not a lot, but there is definitely literature on the matter. It was examined definitely in the scientific world, the experiences, and often the reports were very similar between different people who went through this experience, very similar comparisons to the sources we have in the Zohar, what happens to the soul the moment it leaves the body and enters into Olam HaEmet. Anyways, there's some very incredible stories about it. But in any case, the experience, as always, brings about a complete transformation in the being of the person who went through it. And clearly, and so that's and my understanding in terms of what Chazal say, that the ashes of Yitzchak Avinu are on top of the Mizbeach. Whoever Yitzchak was before he went up, those are ashes. and whoever he comes down, that's already a different being. And that self-sacrifice, on that internal level, is the prototype of any Mesirut Nefesh throughout the ages. Now, in brackets, I just want to mention a point to think about because of its relevance today, and very painful relevance today, and I'm skipping back to the Inyanim we spoke about last week, in terms of Yishma. I mentioned already twice here the Gemara, the argument between Rashi brings it down, the argument between Yishmael and Yitzchak, who was more of a Moser Nefesh. Yishmael says, I was a greater Moser Nefesh because I did Bris Milah when I was 13, and Yitzchak says, well, basically, the Akedah. Now, what comes out of this is that in Bereshit, as we're going through the Beru, the selection between Yitzchak and Yishmael, the underlying theme seems to be Mesirut Nefesh, or extent of Mesirut Nefesh. Now, if you apply to this the big rule of the Ramban, and that is Sefer Bereshit is the prototype book of Maaseh Avot Siman LeBanim, it definitely calls for a lot of thinking and contemplating that in our day and age, the way Yishmael seems to be screaming out his being in the world, and God's name in the world, is revolving around what the Western world, and definitely us as Jews, seem as very warped Mesirut Nefesh, self-sacrifice, as they blow themselves up to pieces to kill as many people, the old women, men, and children. And Mesirut Nefesh, being at the very center of our confrontation, and acting out of the Yishmael, Yisrael confrontation at our day and age, I understand it, at least, as completely as an acting out of the Mesirut Nefesh arguments and the selections between Yishmael and Yitzchak and back in Sefer Bereshit. Okay, end of brackets. But in any case, the Akedah on the Yitzhak level of the Akedah, right now we're not talking about the Avraham Avinu level of the Akedah, brought out of Yitzhak and brought into the world the next Midah in the list of the seven Midot, from Chesed into Gevurah, or from Ahava into Yira, and that Yira manifests itself in its full form, the complete Koveshet Yitzro, the complete cancellation, self-cancellation, in the form of this bitul of one's being in front of the greater being of God. Mesirut Nefesh brings out, and the Akedah completely brings out in the full form the Midah of Yira, Yirat Shamayim, or Gevura, and then there's the new second Midah comes into the world through Yitzchak, through the act of the Akedah. Okay? That's what we can say at this point. However, I'm going to take everything one step further right now. Parashat Vayera introduces the Akedah, and therefore the complete birth of the Midah of Yitzhak, that of Yira, Yirat Shamayim, or of Gevurah, at the very end of the Parsha. But the Parsha began with something completely different, and that is with the message that Yitzhak will be born, but coupled together with the Inyanim that seem to have been very, very, very different. Let's go back to the way the Parsha began. Clearly the Parsha, and that's what we've been talking about 10-15 minutes, it's giving birth to a new Midah coming into existence, coming into history, Chesed into the world. And yet, only at the very end does the Midah actually come out. The Parsha actually begins with the fact that Yitzchak, we're told, will be born, which we can accept, introducing the new Midah that's coming into existence. We're opening the new Parsha with the message that it's coming. But we quickly go into the whole long story of the destruction of Sodom, the Amorah. How do we understand? I'm asking you a question. How do we understand the opening up of the Parsha, which is about the unfolding and the coming into existence of the new Midah, the Midah of Gevurah, which will actually fully come out only by the end of the Parsha? Why does that Parsha begin with the whole story of the demolishing of Sodom and the saving of Lot? How would you understand that? ברוך אתה אדוני אלוהינו מלך העולם שהכל נהיה בדברו.
אמן.
I'm going to want to come back to what Sadia is talking about, and that is Avraham Avinu and his interaction with God in terms of the whole dialogue and negotiation whether this dome should or should not be destroyed, how we understand that. That we'll talk about hopefully this a little soon, if not tomorrow. More so, before going into that. Yeah.
On a very basic level, you can say that there's no order, there's no chronological order to the Torah. So, I mean, I know it doesn't help with your point, but it could be bad.
No, but it's helpful that you're bringing it up because I want to emphasize the following. I forgot your first name.
Tali.
Tali, right. When we find sources, Chazal, Rishonim, they talk about Ein Mukdam Mochal B'Torah, that one should not expect to find order in the Torah. Ein Mukdam Mochal B'Torah does not mean, and I'm not saying necessarily that's how he meant it, but does not mean that there's no order to Torah. There's no, according to that approach, there's no chronological order to Torah. But that the chronological order was removed for the sake of a deeper order, which is what Torah is interested in. Torah is not about an introducing of chronology. Torah is of a higher or a deeper, whatever term you would choose to use, order. And based on that deeper order, that's going to determine the unfolding of issues in terms of Torah. Chronology sometimes will fit, sometimes will not fit. Okay? That's very, very important to emphasize, and it's good that I'm happy that it came up. Yes?
You could also say, like we said before, that by the Arayos, that like just as like relations with one's sister was a perverted form of chesed. So to hear what we find in Sodom, just based on the name, is also a perverted form of chesed in some way, and one that specifically denies any boundaries or limits, like more so. So Yitzchak can like come out of the destruction of that in a certain way, like out of the destruction of like an overreaching chesed, can come like a counter reaction to it.
One has to think about that, if that's valid. I'm not sure. However, Yitzchak does not come out of this. In no way, Yitzchak seems to be coming out of stone.
He's contrasted to it. Like, they talk about his birth with the destruction of Sodom.
Okay, that could be a little more so. After using what Barry said in terms of coming out, think broader. What actually does come out of Sodom? Yes, sir.
I was going to rephrase what Barry said. That he said the chesed used in the wrong way is basically chesed with the lack of free will.
Okay.
So at the same time, we're taking out that we're fixing that bad chesed at the same time as we're installing it. We're really offering the same.
Well, these are aspects I want to touch upon. Broader, you'll see what I'm trying to get to in order to take things one step further. Yes, Abhi.
As we're moving along with the mitos and transitioning from the first one to the second one, we also start to develop this. Machos based up and it was
okay, exactly. Very good. Yeah, I'm just taking it, no contradiction to anything which was said, but on one level higher than all that, and that is the whole story of Sodom. Out of the destruction and the demolishing of Sodom, we draw out of there the genes of David HaMelech. How? We all know the story. Lot and his daughters find themselves outside of Sodom in a mountain, and their self-conviction at that first night is that the world was destroyed and demolished. It was a nuclear bomb, and that's it. There's nobody more, no men to come and have relations with us, as warped as it may be. We have no choice but to have relations with our father, because if we're not going to have it, there's no other humans in the world. They were convinced that the world was basically demolished, and they were the only ones to be saved. Think about this, the most incredible point I think I've seen once years ago, I don't remember where. Think of the frame of mind. I think I mentioned over here earlier already, one of our first shiurim, Chazal go on and on, many sources, and the Gemara as well, very much so in the Zohar, about the frame of mind, the mental, spiritual frame of mind of the parents at the moment of conception, at the moment of when they're in their relationship, has dramatic effect on the quality and on the essence of the soul that they were going to draw down into the world from the world of souls. And therefore, all this Svarim talk about, the Ramban speaks about it in great length, and all sources that encourage a Jew to purify himself and to elevate his being as he's about to come together with his wife, especially if they're at a stage that they can actually conceive. Because their frame of mind at that time, whether it'll be more selfish oriented and more desire oriented, as opposed to pure, cleaner, more sanctified with the soul be. Keeping that in mind, and keeping in mind the fact that as they are having relations, those two knights, the two sisters, with Lot, they are convinced that the world is gone, and the only ones to give a future to the world and to bring life to the entire mankind is them. So what their kavana is, at least the girls, the daughters, at the moment of the relationship is they're here to save mankind as a whole. Out of such an intention, a soul broad enough and big enough to bring the world to complete tikkun, which is what Mashiach is about, can in fact come out. Okay. It's an incredible contemplation. But in any case, what Avi is saying is that before we go on to develop the first midah, for it to give birth to the second midah in the list of the seven, in the list of the seven midot, before that, we need to plant the seeds and create the possibility and create the genes for the system to complete itself by the end of the process in the form of David HaMelech much later on. And Midah of Malchut personified and embodied through David. Meaning, before we go on for Midah 1 to develop towards Midah 2 and to start building the system, we will first jump ahead all the way to the very completion, set the stage for that completion, and then we can start moving forwards from the first to the seventh, once the seventh was put in place. That's what Avi is claiming. What we have not done is at all enter into the question, why should it be such? What's the meaning of that? What's the deeper meaning in terms of the development process of the midot for first setting the stage and first defining the destination, and then starting to build up towards that? How do one understand that? That's something that in the next couple minutes I'd like to start going into, and we'll probably have to continue it on further levels tomorrow. Bezat Hashem, Ari, what do you want?
Does this step in developing up that don't have anything that's going to do with the stuff before that's going on simultaneously?
In a deep way, I absolutely yes. I don't know if I'm going to even share, but absolutely. Bear in mind, speaking of the Devorah's color is red, that's the color of hair of David HaMelech, and that's the color of hair of Esav, who's going to be the waist of this midah. We'll be talking about that. With a very significant difference between these two redheads, and that's David HaMelech on the one hand, who has beautiful eyes, as opposed to Esav, who doesn't. But we'll be talking about it. For those who are not familiar, we'll just mention, of course, again, how does this come about? Sdom, Lot, and his daughters, Vnot, Lot, we have Moab, and we have Ammon born. Moab means literally from my father, from the father, Moab, Meha'av. From this relationship of Arayot and family, incest in the family between Lot and his daughters, as bizarre as it may be, no one else but ultimately later on, the most important and most significant, very positive individual woman, Ruth, comes out at a much later stage of history, enters into the system of Judaism, insists on coming in, and very much so represents the, or personifies the female convert of all times, and out of her relationship with Boaz, who marries her, which is what the story of Megillat Ruth is about, Oved is born, then to give birth to Yishai, then to give birth to David, and somehow in Sdom, we found and we created the genes for David HaMelech and the Midah of Malchut that he will be bringing out. There's a pasuk, I think, in Sefer Tehillim, Matzati David Avdi B'Sdom. I found David HaMelech in Sdom. That's God speaking. Where did I find him? I found him in Sdom. This is incredibly thought-provoking for anybody who's a touch of a thinker, and for those even who are not. and that is, why in the world that a soul like David HaMelech, with everything that he so centrally represents in Klal Yisrael, have to come from something that seems to be so deformed and so bizarre as a father having relations with his daughters where he's not even conscious of what's going on? According to some sources, he's actually very conscious of what's going on, acting as if he doesn't enjoy or not knowing what's going on. But in any case, why would he be coming from such a relationship? And the truth of the matter is, the process is more complicated and more bizarre than that, in the ways that we will see on the later on, and actually in part of Vayeshev, when we continue developing the genes, bringing about the birth of David HaMelech. But in any case, our next stage to understand, and we ran out of time, we'll have to see it already, because Hashem tomorrow, is how do we understand this? What's the meaning of first moving all the way forward to the destination where they're all aimed at? And only then we're starting to build up stage after stage, midah after midah, bezalashem, for tomorrow.